नमो घोराय गुरुवे अघोराय महर्षये घोरतराय रुद्राय सर्वायति नमो नमः सर्वाधिपाय रुद्राय भगवते अमितात्मने तपः पुंजाय देवाय मृत्युंजयाय ते नमः स्वतंत्रानंदनाथाय नमः संकल्पमूर्तये नमो विधिविधानाय साधना सिद्धिहेतवे घोराय घोरपुत्राय नमः प्रस्कर्णवाय च मेधातिथिं नमस्कृत्य तपोवृत्तिं समाश्रयी रक्षन्तु मां वसिष्ठाद्या सप्तर्षयो महर्षयः देवर्षिर्नारदश्चैव ब्रह्मर्षिसनकादयः क्लेशकर्मविपाकाशैरस्पृष्टस्वरूपिणी पूर्वेषामपि गुरुवे हृदयस्थाय ते नमः रामाय राममित्राय नमो घोरास्त्रधारिणे शिष्याय निजभक्ताय मूलविद्याप्रदायिने अंगिरसे अग्निरूपाय नमस्ते जातवेदसे नमैड्याय देवाय गुरुदेवाय ते नमः पाशराशिकवलीकृतिदक्षं दक्षिणं वपुरघोरममोघं भैरवं श्रयदनुग्रहेतो शांकरं जयतु नेत्रमनुत्रम् ओम शांति शांति शांति। अमेजिंग हाउ टाइम फ्लाइज। इट्स 23 इयर्स अगो स्वामी जी लेफ्ट हिज बॉडी। 23 इयर्स। And if we don't pay attention, then suddenly 230 years are gone. Then 2300 years are gone. Then 23,000 years are gone. And if we as individuals are not vigilant about ourselves, 1 year, you know, 1 day, 1 year, 2 year, 10 years, 20 years, and then life gone. Similarly, as a society, if we are not careful, then things never change. Things never improve. And then we talk about why things are the way they are. Then we establish big, big universities, big, big institutions to study the cause for it, behind it. No. Or because of the big gap between poor and rich. Oh, because of such a big, rigidity with caste system, because of the monarchy or oligarchy or communism or democracy, no? Because of such and such. So our effort goes into finding so-called logically validating valid causes. And what is most important thing to know, and this is why I thought this time let's have different format of celebrating Swamiji's Mahasamadhi, is let's have satsang to remind ourselves that we have become too accustomed to find the sources of our comforts and discomforts, causes of our comforts and discomforts, somewhere outside ourselves. And then we arrange our entire research methodology to go through that route. And what not normally, but almost consistently is missing here is that we forget to see right next to ourselves. Before, it's like I lose my watch. So first, I lost my watch. Then I start looking for it somewhere in California. And then somebody reminds me, when have you been to? When were you in California? Well, I never went there. Then why are you looking for it in California? The reason is, so I give a reason. The person who stole it, in all probability, may have gone to the farthest place in the United States of America. You are right. We didn't find it. So, well, then let's go to next door countries. Somebody may have stolen and hid it somewhere in Mexico. Then we go to Mexico. Then no, we couldn't find it. But now this is a proven fact, so-called proven methodology, that somebody stole it. And the thief must have hid it somewhere far, far away. Then finally we reach South America. Go all to the tip of Argentina. No, possibly, maybe at the South Pole somewhere. No. This way, whole 1,000 years have gone by, and I still have not found my watch. Instead of finding the watch, I died. Then my children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, all the descendants are still in the search of this watch. That's how 1,000 years, you know, went by. Therefore, what I wanted to remind here, that closest to us is our own mind. So before you go there, first like to try to look for this watch. Exactly wherever you are. It's actually here, sitting right here. Then you look for a place where quite often, for one reason or other, you are accustomed to taking off this watch. Should I share with you my own habit? For some reason, I have very difficult time wearing watch in the bathroom. So when I go to the bathroom, I normally take off my watch. So whenever I'm looking for my watch, those who really love and care for me and know me, the first they go to those bathrooms where normally I go to. And when this watch is not found there, then that's when the extensive search begins. When I realize that the search for this watch is more costly than the watch itself, I tell them not to search for it. This is how important it is to search our own mind. For that, important thing is to have a clear and joyful mind. If we don't have that kind of mind, then we will not be able to find that what is in the mind itself. That is the best tool we have. Mind is the best tool we have to search for anything, whether inside the mind or outside the mind, within ourselves or outside ourselves. So that's why somehow it just so happened as part of our Bhagavad Gita study series that we have, this is what happened today, that this is the topic for today. Method for finding or cultivating a clear and joyful mind. This was very, very, very favorite subject of Swamiji. When I looked at this topic, that I thought, everywhere in the world, people have been chanting God's name for tens of thousands of years. Every scripture, every knowledgeable, wise person has been telling us that remember name of God, things will be fine. And when you look at, if you are in America, you find so many churches. If you are in Middle East, you will find so many mosques. If you are in India, you will find so many temples. So there is no shortage of temples, mosques, synagogues, churches. And there is no shortage of people, those who attend those places of prayers or houses of God. And when people go there, at least their intention is very pure, very good. Let us go and gather there in the name of God. Find peace, find happiness. There we try our best to have as a clear, straightforward, cheerful, joyful, and generous mind as possible. And great thing is that to a great extent during those hours of prayers and service, we are in a fairly good shape of our mind, good frame of our mind. But quite often it does not last. If you have paid attention to any congregation, in any denomination, that if we arrive before the services begin, the chatter going on, right before services begin, when you arrive, people are talking on all kinds of subjects, family matters, financial matters, political matters, social matters, and local news. And sometimes it goes all the way to our friends and loved ones, those who are also part of the same very church, same very mosques, and same very temple. They are talking about exchanging their so-called thoughts. And not all of those thoughts are really worth exchanging. No? And yet we exchange. Then there is a system. A pandit comes, priest comes, starts ceremony, and somehow people come down. When service is over, formal sitting is no longer there. Then again people go back to the same issue which they had earlier before the service started. They immediately pick up from there. By the time we walk out of those places of worship, then we are on our way to a restaurant or wherever, going back home. Then we are back to the same very world where we have been perennially. So see here, we drop the world for a moment. We spend 1 hour, half hour, 2 hour or whatever. Then we go back to the same very world and pick up exactly where we had left. Not exact issue, but the exact kind of state of mind. In that state of mind, we automatically, just so happens, the same or similar train of thought comes in. So, in Bhagavad Gita, the last portion of the study that we had, from 49, chapter 2, 49 verse, all the way to somewhat 60, 61. Discussion was about our actions and how we perform our actions so that we reclaim and retain a stable mind, stability of our mind. And that's called samadhi. Arjuna had asked question, how does it happen? How do we do that? So there was again discussion. It happens because of this, because of this, because of this. Finally, Arjuna asked that how do we really get to such a stable state of mind where not only during our meditation, not only during our prayer, but even before and after the prayer in our day-to-day life, we are blessed with a stable mind, and the stability and clarity of our mind is reflecting in our thought, speech, and action. And that is when the verses of Bhagavad Gita preceding to 61, 62, 63, which is the subject of today's discussion. It says that when a person, how do we know that who is established in that state of samadhi? Indirectly, Krishna is reminding that observing whether or not somebody is established in a state of samadhi is not here the point. The point is that it is a guideline, or let's say clue, whether or not you are established in the state of samadhi. How you speak, how you talk, these are all external signs and symptoms whether or not you are established in yourself, or you have cultivated a clear, calm, tranquil, and stable one-pointed mind. The external, that any sign and symptom that you observe in others, those sign and symptoms are very rough. They are not really as reliable clues as the subtle ones. There are times when many of the actors and actresses, when they go on the stage, they do very good job. Professors and teachers, when they are in the classroom, they do very good job explaining these subjects. Because training, you can learn that art and perfect it. How to, and that art is the art of delivering your subject to your students, to your audience. So, that is art. By watching and observing that how you deliver your subject, no? How, let's say in my case, for example, just by watching how Panditji is sitting so straight, how Panditji is talking, look at his face, no? How much light is there. No? None of those things really give you a real understanding of me. Why? I might be giving this lecture because for the last 40 years that's what I have been doing. It's art I have cultivated, for example, I may have cultivated. I'm sitting here because I'm so engrossed in my presentation that I'm not, probably this is much more comfortable to sit this way, but I might not be able to sit quietly when I'm only by myself. Third, there's lots of light emitting from my face and from my forehead, because not there is enlightened soul sitting there, there's enlightenment there, but rather I might have applied some cream. Or the way the light is focused on me. No? And amazing thing is, when you become bald, then it becomes very shiny. No? So these signs and symptoms really don't tell you exactly what Pandit Rajmani is. And so, but still, certain things, if you are here for a month, 2 months, 3 months, then you might be able to see my true self, how I behave, how I stand in the, how I present myself in the lecture, how I present myself while standing in the lunch line, and how I play with my children. And when things are really good, how I behave, and when things are really bad, how I behave, based on that. But you can assess, but it will take a month, 2 months, 4 months, 5 months. And you have to see me when off guard, when I'm not really too much aware of my, skillfulness, skillfully delivering my contents. So that's what Arjuna, Krishna reminded, that although yes, there is definitely certain things you can learn about others by watching that person's speech. How quickly you just jump to a certain conversation without really paying attention to whether or not this is the right time. How hard it is for you to stop, continuing that conversation, that tells you how indisciplined, uncontrolled mind you have, therefore what kind of practice or discipline, training you need to do in order to gradually transform yourself. But still, those things are quite, they are not the tools and means which you can really see whether or not this particular gem is perfectly cut and perfectly polished. And this is when this today's discussion comes in. That when Arjuna asks, how does it happen? There are times when I'm trying my best not to lose my temper. Okay? I've been trying my best not to be sad, not to be angry, not to be inappropriate. But still, why do I become that way? Why do I fall in that trap? So, and it seems like these kinds of habits or these kinds of behaviors take over against my will. I do not want to be that way, and yet I become that way. I do not talk that way, I do not want to think that way, I do not want to act and behave that way, and yet I act that way. Where does it come from? Krishna tells, raga dvesha viyuktaistu vishyan indriyaischaran atmavashyer vidhiyatma prasadam adhigacchati. And each time when we lose our temper, or each time when we are swept away by our internal turmoils, and whenever we are come back to a little bit relatively more peaceful place inside us, then you feel very bad that it has become my consistent pattern. And in last 1 year, 2 years, 10 years, I do not see much change. And upon not seeing much change, or improvement, We feel very bad that if this is the rate at which I'm improving, then how long will it take to really find that place inside me where I'm calm and tranquil and joyful? What should I do? So that's what Krishna said. Ich raga dvesha, raga and dvesha, attachment and aversion. Allow your senses, allow your mind to contact their objects. However, without holding on to raga and dvesha, attachment and aversion. Well, sir, that is very hard. I've been trying for so many years. Can you explain the whole process of this thing? Yes. And that's when this verse 62, 63, 64, etc. Let's start. The verse is, Dhyayato Vishayana Pumsaha Sangaste Supajayate Sangaj. It's really like a sutra. Number one, Dhyayato Vishayana Pumsaha Sangaste Supajayate Sangaj Jayate Kamaha Kamat Krodho Vijayate Krodhad Voti Sammoha Sammohat Smriti Vibhrama Smriti Pranasad Buddhinaso Buddhinasad Prayasyati Pranasyati. Eight steps are there. This whole process of losing our mind and losing ourselves is completed in eight steps. It begins with something super simple, super naive, and super harmless looking phenomena. That is thinking. Thought comes in the mind and the thought never goes away. We keep brooding on the same thing again and again. We keep talking about the same thing again and again. For a while, it doesn't look like it's really that harmful. Okay. And yet, suddenly we notice that we have moved on to the next step. That this so-called random, harmless-looking thought or process of thoughts, trains of thoughts, have now gotten a good grip over on our consciousness. We really now become attached to it. How do we know that we have become attached to the thought that I have been continuously entertaining? When in attempt to break the thoughts we feel pain, it means we have become attached to it. When a thought starts demanding, deep inside it starts demanding that better you do something about it. When a thought begins to claim a value, that this is very valuable and this is important, it got to be resolved. That means we have reached all the way to the level of attachment. And when it turns into, when it reaches a place where it begins to identify, thought process identifies a particular object, particular person, particular scenario as an object of that thought, then that means it has turned into desire. Once it has turned into desire, We can't just so easily ignore it. I want, then that means I want things to be exactly the way I want. If things don't present themselves the way I want, then it means it is something bad. It is unfair. And always unfair means somebody else is wrong. Something is wrong out there, not in you. Because the object of desire is somewhere out there. You want to have such and such kind of job. Or you want to go somewhere tomorrow. And your loved one tells you, I have so many other things to do, I think. The idea itself that someone who loves you so much and you love so much is now presenting another option, and that means, can we cancel this so-called project? When that becomes a big issue, that means desire is very well crystallized desire. And if it does not materialize, then comes the anger. When anger comes in, the very, very first thing that happens when anger comes in, the linear thought process is disrupted. Our understanding of what is cause and what is effect becomes very blurry. In that angry state of mind, all we want to do is prove that I'm right and another person is wrong. Anybody who is preventing me is definitely wrong, and anybody who is not supporting me in finding what I wish to find, what I desire to have, is also wrong, is my enemy. A 10-year-old lovely selfless friendship is sacrificed in a matter of moment. The reason is that angry state of mind automatically creates a state of confusion, delusion. We are no longer clear and strong enough to think in any logical manner. The inherent value of right and wrong is totally distorted. Inherent value in things which makes a thing either right or wrong or good or bad, it's totally distorted. Acquired value takes over. And this acquired value of that particular condition, scenario, person, circumstance, situation, or issue is supported by, brought by, manufactured by an angry and confused state of mind. First thing, an angry person will be all over. Person, that angry person will not be able to hold even the discussion, you know, it will waver. And you will not be able to communicate with angry person. That becomes further frustrating. And if somehow still, if we are not able to apply some remedy, then this state of angry, confused state of mind matures into loss of memory. One thing definitely happens to us, that is, our retentive power becomes damaged. And we start making our decisions based on what just happened an hour ago, a day ago, 2 weeks ago. What has been the nature of our all other circumstances and relationships in longer context of 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, 10 year, or lifelong? That context is completely forgotten. Mind has no ability to remember all those things. How much we have sacrificed for each other. How wonderfully we have lived together with each other. No. How skillfully we united our forces in order to reach somewhere. All that is forgotten. 10 years, 20 years, 30 years of hard work just goes into garbage can, which is disorganized garbage can, which is not sorted out. Everything is just dumping into the same garbage can, dumpster. That's what happens. Smriti Phransha Buddhinasu. When we are not able to keep a good track of what happened last year, last month, last week, today, what are the consequences of it, what the lessons we have learned, is it really true that you have been very bad to me? Is it really true that I have been very good to you or bad to you? All is forgotten. Quite often, even there are times when people make silly, bizarre decisions, even in their business. No. And those decisions are made by a mind that has been a container of just frustrations and disappointments for ages. Many times people make such funny decisions that for a month, 2 months, 1 year, 2 year, you are living a comfortable, peaceful life. Then that comfort and peacefulness itself becomes so painful, you know, because you have been so accustomed to live a chaotic life. There had always been some drama in this wonderful situation. The drama is gone and mind is missing that drama. That forces you to start seeking something which had been so familiar to us. And we have lived with it for such a long time. Once that happens, we are doomed. Smriti Phransat Buddhinasu. Buddhinasat Pranashyati. Once the power of discrimination, discernment is damaged because of the injury to our retentive power, then we are doomed. So here, we are left with very amazing circumstance. Last sentence that I was just using, that if we are accustomed to some being, if we have lived with a chaotic life, if we have been living with, you know,
Or let's say we have become accustomed to a chaotic life for 20 years, 15, 20 years. We got extremely tired, exhausted, we got in trouble somehow. God's grace descended. Your loved ones came forward. Circumstances changed. And that chaotic, turmoilsome circumstances were replaced by something healthier, peaceful. You felt a great relief. But as soon as you are relatively healthy, mind starts wondering, hey, what happened to my all that drama? Where did it go? I watch this kind of scenario again and again and again. We are lucky that we are in search of peace and happiness. And we are lucky that we stick to this search. We are lucky that we have overcome our tendency of finding health and happiness and not dropping it once we have found it. There are lots of people out there. They crave peace, health, peace, and happiness. As soon as they get it, they become completely restless because now there is energy in the body, energy in the senses, energy in the mind, and that healthy, energetic, commotion-free, problem-free mind again goes back to its old grooves. Person repeats the same situation again. Again goes through the pain and sorrow. Again searches for a remedy. Again goes to all temples, churches, mosques, gurus and swamis and pandits. Again tries to share and find some help from the loved ones. And as soon as he or she finds it, again he is restless. So when this kind of problem happens, what to do with that? That's where there is a beautiful word called Vritti Samskara Chakra. It's a cycle. What we do today, that repeated action of today creates impression on our mind. Any thought, any action, or let's say any action, whether physical, mental, or verbal, following the law of nature, makes an impression. When you repeat that action, when we talk in that way, once or twice, three times, five times, 10 times, 100 times, when we act in that particular way, once, 2 times, 10 times, 20 times, then each time when we repeat it, those impressions keep getting stronger. They keep forming deeper grooves. They turn into habits. I have people notice I play solitaire on my iPad. There are times when I play 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 10 minutes. There are times when I really go completely crazy. I play it hours and hours and hours. But I do one thing with my solitaire. I play to the point that my eyes get tired. When your eyes get tired, anything you do, if you repeated things, you repeatedly keep seeing same thing again and again and again and again and again, and finally your eyes get tired, then you just massage a little bit and then do it again. You get tired. But the action is very limited action. It's only two or three colors in solitaire cards. And all they do is it flies from here to there. No. Only this much. So it is very small number of variations in a very small space. Same very action repeated hundreds of times. When you won solitaire, when you complete one solitaire game, if you are super good, and not only good, super lucky, then probably it will be somewhere in the range of 110 seconds, 108 seconds, you completed the whole task. If you are really good at, you may be able to do it in 80 seconds, 75 seconds, but 108, 110 moves. So it means if I played 100 times of that, multiply it by another 100, 10,000 times that those cards have flashed through my mind. And what I do immediately, just one long breath of prananusandhana. Take my mind into the Agya Chakra. I start my meditation and watch whether those solitaire cards had power to flash in my mind once or not. If they flashed, then I withdraw my mind from those cards and then focus just on my mantra in a space which is far more smaller than the size of the screen of my iPad. It is hardly less than 1/4 of a square inch in that much space. If I fail to do that, it means my actions have formed habit. What I do it? I come to my office, I conduct my work, I meet with people, I fully engage myself in everyone's pleasant and unpleasant requests, conversations. Somebody's happy, somebody's not happy. Some things are going rightly, sometimes some certain things are going not so right. When I'm dealing with that, I have to deal with that. If half of my mind is somewhere deep inside me doing my mantra, then I'm not doing a good job with my friend who has come with full expectation that I'll talk to Panditji and Panditji will help me. I have to be with that person fully, with my 100% interest, intention, love, care, everything. But if I'm with that person or with that, if I'm involved in that person's issues fully, 100%, then how can I make sure that that involvement itself does not create an impression on my mind? While I must be fully engaged with that person's problems. If I am not, then the law of nature says that if your whole heart is not there, when you are trying to love, care, help somebody, and if you are not doing it wholeheartedly, then definitely your love, care, and help to that person is not going to make much difference. You are fake and you are practicing hypocrisy. I must be with that person, with those who come with seeking guidance, affection, or those who are even coming with some kind of spoken, unspoken, articulated, unarticulated intention of, or let's say expectation of finding some relief by being in Panditji's company. I can discharge the duty that has been given to me by the divine providence. I can discharge it fully only when I am with that person fully. If I am with this world fully, then this world is going to make impression on my mind. How to touch people's life, especially those who are so near and dear to me, at the same time remain untouched by those whom I am touching. No? It is possible when we pay attention to this vritti sanskara chakra. Normal course of life, I'm not saying that everybody should be there, which I have been hoping or at least trying my best to be and to do. But yes, watch yourself that you are overall, your intentions are correct. You are a good person. You mean well. And for last many years, last many months, very sincerely you have been trying not to hurt and harm anybody, including yourself, including your own mind, including your own speech, including your own heart. You have been trying to be kind to yourself and kind to others. And yet, every once in a while, suddenly you explode. Magma spills over. And you stay in that frame of mind for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 1 hour, 2 hours. Then you need many, many, many soothing sessions. No? So see here, when you are already in negative frame of mind, that is not the time to study Bhagavad Gita. Because you don't have the kind of mind you need. That is not the time to just start, pick up your mala and start doing japa japa, my mantra mantra, om namah shivaya, namah shivaya, namah shivaya. No. At that time, form some other kind of habit. Little prayer. Go and wash your face and just do some chanting, do some prayer and come and pick up telephone, stop by a bit to your friend's office. How are things? Not necessarily. Bhagavad Gita doesn't say that just go and ask or start telling your misery to everybody and anybody. No, do. By magnifying your misery and so-called even to your best friends, it's not going to, be attenuated. It's not going to go away. But rather just change the state of mind by applying the simplest means and tools. And when you are back to normal state of mind, that is when look at Bhagavad Gita, look at the Yoga Sutra, look at many, many other notes you may have already made during your many, many sessions of self-study and self-examinations. Where did I miss this time? Look at it. How did suddenly I happen to fall in the same very trap in which I have been falling so constantly and consistently? This time, what was the trigger point? You will notice there is some samskara. That samskara, that deep-rooted habit pattern is causing you to behave in a manner that created this vritti, this behavior. So, by watching your samskaras, by watching your deep-rooted habits and their influence on your current actions, and by watching that the fact that how little effort you had put into maintaining your own composure, how easily and comfortably and carelessly you allowed yourself to be swept away, you will be able to see that you are able to come from both sides, from the side of your deep-rooted samskaras, and you are also coming from the other end, that is your vritti, current actions. And that is how you will, on one hand, you will allow yourself to stop creating new samskaras by stopping these vrittis, these behaviors. And also you will stop your old habits. No. You will stop them in terms of letting them create a situation where you again create new vrittis. So our effort has to be from both sides. And this is where amazing thing comes, abhyasa and vairagya. Through methodical practice of so-called meditation, you block the roaming tendencies of your mind in current, in your present. And by practicing vairagya, so-called non-attachment, which is a complete process in itself, you will be able to prevent your samskaras, your old habits, you will prevent them from influencing, your current, your present. All you have to pay attention to your present. And for that, you adhere to certain disciplines. Simple disciplines. For example, this example is, even though there is a great unrest and unconscious force inside that prompts me to speak in wrong manner at wrong times. In fact, there is a strong force inside that prompts us to just jump and start saying things without paying attention to whether or not this is right time and right way of saying or not. Just simply pay attention to that. This is how normally it happens to me. Thought comes in my mind, it completely takes over, and my speech is no longer under my control. It is so uncontrolled that immediately, as earliest opportunity, as soon as the earliest opportunity comes, recklessly I start speaking. Let me pay attention to this behavior. That's it. This is how you will start doing so-called practice. This is called practice. And by reminding continuously that life is much bigger than what we see today. Purpose of life is much bigger than what so far I have achieved and what so far I have lost. Purpose of life is much, much bigger than all the achievements of the world combined. This kind of reminder is called putting vairagya, non-attachment, into practice. That is how we shift the value proposition of our current action and the forces that are propelling us to take our current actions. This is what here Bhagavad Gita is telling. Kamad hodhi sambho. Dhyayato vishyanupunsa 62. Dhyayato vishyanupunsa. Just by thinking. Pay attention to thinking. Is it something that important? That I just go on brooding and brooding and brooding on these silly things? I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do this. No. Is it really just by continuously being nervous and reckless about I'm supposed to do this, oh my God, what I'm going to do? No. Is it going to be done that way? Is it going to be accomplished? Am I going to finish my work just because I am so constantly brooding about it? Okay. Answer is normally no. Why am I putting that much heart into it. Is it really, is the pressure of work is so much that it's not letting me do the work? So, in modern psychology, I understand it's called anxiety. But the origin of anxiety is really, if you pay attention to, it's something super simple. And way to deal with it is also very super simple. What we do not want to do is accept the fact that I'm hurting and harming myself. And I'm hurting and harming my loved ones. In the process, I'm hurting and harming this beautiful life that God has given us. If we can remind ourselves, then we can say, yes, this is my habit. Out of habit, I'm anxious. My anxiety has grown to the point that even chemically, you know, it's like I don't have much control over it. Once it happens, it happens. But if we can remind, little bit what I just said, then there is an amazing support from inside that will calm down that wave, that tsunami, which is the tiny little ripple of thought, which is about to turn into attachment, and attachment about to turn into desire, desire just about to give birth to anger, anger that which is just about to give birth to confusion, and that confusion which is just about to damage our power of memory, retentive power, and so on and so on. It just can simply stop right there. Okay, stop right there. Suppose if it has already gone a little bit too far ahead, yes. Then another thing is, it's a constant reminder again that life has much bigger purpose. There is much higher intelligence. There is much higher truth in me. There is much higher truth outside me. There is much higher truth in the world and the natural world, and especially in my loved ones. That is more precious than what I'm gaining and what I'm losing. Let me have trust and faith in that higher truth and higher reality. With that reminder, we can overcome the influence of the tiny little ripple, and it's definitely we can stop it from turning into a big wave and finally tsunami. We can stop tsunami if we know that it is about to start. Okay. Once it has started, then it's difficult. But there is no tsunami that never comes to an end. Once that tsunami is over, that is the time to start paying attention to the next wave of the tsunami. Normally, that's what we do not do. Why this thought happens? Of course, it has much deeper cause into our samskaras. Why and how samskaras awaken? How they start contributing to the new set of actions and the impressions created by them. How those impressions are now further being compiled in the same category where those samskaras, deep-rooted habit patterns have come from. How to stop this whole process? That is the subject of next discussion. Thank you. God bless you. And this particular evening satsang is dedicated to Swamiji and all the masters, those who are constantly guiding us. God bless you all.